Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Kia ora, welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod here on Sky Sport and Rugby Pass. I'm Ross Carl, joined in studio by James Parsons in Auckland and Bryn Hall down in Christchurch. And we're going to get straight into it because we can. There's no part of us that's enjoying this in any way possible. The Crusaders. They got tripped up on the weekend, 33-12, and none of us saw it coming, Jibba.
Well, I'm not enjoying it because I didn't pick them. I would have, if I'd picked the Highlanders, if I'd put my money where my banter mouth was and I was winding Brynner up on text, I would have looked pretty in the old picks, but I picked the Crusaders and I should have just gone with the Highlanders.
As we all did.
Yeah.
As we all did. Brynner, how are you feeling a couple of days after that? Are you in shock or...?
Yeah, it was a good and honest review, if I'm being honest. Yeah, I think the fact that it wasn't just a loss, it was pretty embarrassing, to be honest. I think the Highlanders came down there and came up and really gave it to us. And we were just probably that bit off a little percentage-wise. And we've said a lot on this Super Rugby Derby that if you're just a couple of percent off, you're getting results like you do on the weekend. And to be honest, we were probably a little bit off around our execution. We had 22 unforced errors in our game, which is was really high for us. And we based ourselves on getting really good execution and making good decisions. And probably decisions plus the execution was probably the losing of our game. And again, I thought the Highlanders really pounced on us. I thought they were pretty smart around their game management, around picking up points early. Hunty got a couple of penalties to get the ball rolling, to have a little bit of scoreboard pressure, and then they scored that try. And you were actually pretty lucky to go on probably 16-7 at half time when we scored a try just for half time, because I thought that first half they played it to a tee and played really well. And then we'd usually think that we made the adjustments that we wanted to in that second half, but again, our execution and unforced errors and discipline was probably a combination of things, a lot of those things that really undid us on the weekend. And I thought there were a few individual guys that played really well for the Highlanders. I thought Mitchell Hunt was exceptional on the weekend. I think he was his general play kicking, he put us under a lot of pressure around our exit zone, scrums and lineouts, kicking them long and getting it in behind us and finding grass and really suffocating us. And again, just our decision making and probably execution around those certain things and a lot of aspects in our game as well. We just didn't get right on the weekend. So yeah, it was a tough review. Razor really came in this week and came in today, sorry, and we're a little bit more deeper in our prep and our review. We'd like to think you don't need a loss to be able to rectify a few of the mistakes that we made. But again, whenever you do lose, you come in a little bit more hungry and a little bit more on edge, knowing that you're probably in for a tough review, which it was, and probably really needed for our performance on the weekend.
I think defensively, if you looked at the stats, the Highlanders were around a tackle stat around that 80% mark, which doesn't read that pretty, but a lot of their defence put your skill set under pressure. You spoke about those errors, but also at the set piece, so often we see the Crusaders get in a nice little rhythm. We can refer to you as the machine. The machine gets going and you go to your box kick game and you get in that aerial battle. George Bridge was back. We know how exceptional he is in the air, and other wingers have been doing the business while he's been away. But the Highlanders, again, defensively, went to sacking them all. So you weren't given it all your own way. I felt like the Highlanders really came with an attitude or a mindset to just not give you what you wanted, and which sort of unsettled you and maybe force those errors. Did it feel like that out there? It just, I know you would have been watching from the bench for, you know, the first, you know, stanza, and then you had to come on and try and, I suppose, come from behind from your place. But, you know, I know that you're a student of the game, so you would have been watching, thinking about it from, you know, that first half perspective. Did it feel that they just sort of came out there to just sort of disrupt, sort of no fear attitude from a defensive aspect?
Yeah, I think they did, definitely defensively. I think we were just a little bit off when it came to our breakdown. Traditionally, you know, we want to play at a high tempo, and, you know, the conditions were actually pretty good on the weekend where we probably wanted to implement that a bit better. And what I mean around that is probably our cleaning, our breakdown was pretty sloppy. And so then, you know, guys like Billy Harmon were getting a few turnovers and stunting our momentum. And especially with us having so many errors and discipline errors, especially discipline at the first part of the game, and then not building momentum through that with them getting points. And then when we did have the ball, we'd just make uncharacteristic mistakes, which put us under pressure again. And so it was a real flow and effect, a real snowball effect of, like, yeah, we've got a little bit of momentum here. We've lost it with a poor clean, a decision-making problem, and probably just a skill execution as well. So when you're marrying up those three things, you could probably get away with if you're just having one of those things, and you can rectify it pretty quickly. But I felt that it was just kind of a snowball effect for us where we just weren't getting anything right in that first half, and it probably symbolised with 16 points scored against us. And again, coming back to your point around making really good decisions with them defensively, putting us under pressure in our skill set, and probably our ineffectiveness at the breakdown probably cost us a bit in that first half.
We all get carried away with kind of the idea of unbeatable teams and teams that are running away with competitions, but more often than not, most teams don't get through a competition unscathed, do they?
No, really? I don't think in this competition in particular. Like, we know how formidable the Crusaders are. They've had 4 years where they've been the pinnacle. And you know, there's no doubt that they're still the pinnacle team. You know, 1 week doesn't make them a bad team. They've been exceptional this whole comp, and we sort of probably expect a hell of a bounce back. You know, Bryn's already touched on the ruthless nature that they're already focusing on this. But, you know, a little bit of a backs against the wall mindset for the Highlanders. They had plenty of to prove. They had guys coming in that have been waiting for an opportunity. And I think, you know, I sort of touched on it last week on another show that I do on radio, that when they've got a leadership group that, you know, when they're the underdog, you know, sort of like in 2015, when they're expected to not do something and they really have that feeling about them where it's like, you know, if we're sort of expected not to do something, they've got that really fighting, they love that underdog status. And it was sort of set up perfectly, and I like that Bryn touched on that scoreboard pressure. They really took advantage of that, you know, that territory game. Every time they made a line break, rather than trying to link with the guy inside and out, if you notice, they put it on the boot. They really try to strangle the Crusaders into their own territory. And that showed in the kicking stat. I think it was 35 kicks in play for the Highlanders to the Crusaders 23. And I think that showed their mindset. It was like, let's just play down their end. Let's try and, you know, pin them into their end and strangle them, when sometimes, you know, maybe that would have been looking to interplay and potentially could have been a turnover, could have, you know, maybe forced their hand and played in that 40-metre zone. But they always put on their foot, put the ball right down in that 22 and made the Crusaders either had to play out or, you know, exit. By then, they were like, we want a D, we want to put that defensive pressure. And there's one thing putting that defensive pressure on, but then making it count through, you know, that skill set error, and they tow it through and eventually scoring through Michael Collins is one. And then through Connor Garden-Bashup, that puts the seal on is another. And that's what I mean. Like, the Crusaders have been put under pressure before, but they're such a good team that normally they can fight and find their way out of it. And I think Bryn probably nailed it there, is they've had the ability, when they've had one or two factors go wrong, they can find their way out of it because they are so good. But when there's two or three factors going against them, they just haven't been able to manage it. But I do want to credit the effectiveness of the Highlanders and their ability to make it count, because it's one, forcing the error, but then two, being able to take the points that are on offer and turn those turnovers into points, and then creating scoreboard pressure via the boot by 3 points.
I think one thing that they got that did really well was their adjustments. I think if you look at the first time we played them, they had a lot of opportunities inside our own half, inside that 22, around the line-out driving, being able to try and get over the line where they probably didn't get those points that they deserved. And, you know, again, that gives us momentum and gave us a lot more excitement around, you know, we actually hadn't given any points away and we had the momentum back. But I think, again, I touched on it earlier around, you know, taking those points and not go into this with the mall a lot. You know, the times that they did come in there, they came a little bit, but there was actually a couple of bunts of specials players to get around us, not try to go through us. So I thought those adjustments were really good from the Highlanders compared to the last time we played them in round one. And I actually thought their attack as well was really good. They went down our short side quite a lot, coming back with a lot of players around our short side, and we probably got a lot of gain out of that. Whereas, you know, probably in the past, if they feel like they're not going anywhere, you know, they've got Fakatava or Aaron Smith putting up contestables and we can get the ball back there. So the game plan that they had and the adjustments around holding on to the ball and not giving us the ball was probably a real good thought process around them. And then again, when they did get into our half, they got them through their points through Hunty, and then probably making the learnings that they did in round one, probably not going in our line out more and being able to have a bit of a variation around how they could strike off line outs.
Looking at Mitch Hunt, I mean, it was a very strong performance. He's been in good form and showed towards the end of last year as well, during the Mitre 10 Cup, how good he is. Is he in the pecking order now? You know, we need a first five around the place. Is he going to be in the conversation for the All Blacks?
Well, I think he is. I think he already was at the start of the season when he made the North vs South. Mm. And I think that was the confidence boost he needed. I think he's come out and he said he wasn't expecting to make that, and that almost gave him the boost. And then, you know, coming into the season, he almost wants to just kick on from there. He's had a couple of big performances. I think the Chiefs comeback, he was a big part of that, him and Josh together. But he was a big one in orchestrating this. And then this is another one. And I think it was the triple threat game. He had all sort of skill sets. And the biggest thing that, you know, Bryn's touched on again there is the lessons he took from the first time he played the Crusaders into this one, his ability to get points when they're in the 22, not only just through the threes, but I think Billy Harmon's try, you know, Fayanuku rushes out at him, he uses his feet and still gets the ball away, and then obviously they score through Billy Harmon there. That's quite a skill set to be able to, you know, not be frightened by feeling that pressure. He has the ability to keep his feet and still get the ball and execute that pass. And then the general game awareness, like when I was saying before, when he made those line breaks, it would have been so easy for him to look inside, look out, connect, but he had a game plan and a mindset to play down there. And I had a discussion with the people I was watching the game with. They're like, why is he kicking the ball? And I was like, well, he's putting all the pressure back on them. He's getting the ball down their half and he's just corralling them into the corner, putting them into their 22. And they're like, oh, keep the ball in hand. And I was trying to explain that it's a lot of pressure to get out of your half, and rather than a ruck around, you know, the damage had been done, rather than having a ruck 30 out or 40 out, and, you know, you don't have a hell of a lot of support, you're in behind the line, put it on the boot, and then, you know, you've got that kick pressure. And they really stuck to their guns for that 80 minutes, and it just shows the beauty of orchestrating a complete plan. And I think the beauty of the 3 points. I think the Crusaders showed that against the Blues, the 3-point strategy, and how that scoreboard pressure can unfold, and then it changed your mindset in the opposition. You start having to chase the game. And again, it's showing here at 16-7, you know, just going to the break, you think, oh, well, that gives the Crusaders a sniff. But then straight after the break, they go for another kick. That's 19-7. You're starting to think, I don't know what Bryn was saying, he'll be able to learn more, but you're starting to think, oh, well, that's, you know, you're going to have to get 2 converted tries here to get ahead. And then they obviously score, you know, so now you're really chasing it. And then they get another 3, and then they, you know, the game's gone by then, you know. So those crucial 3s they took at the start of the game really paid dividends for them later in the game, where normally we see the Crusaders take over and score a lot of their points.
There's probably a difference around that as well, Chip. So, you know, you have a feel as a captain, is that, you know, sometimes going for the 3 as a defensive team, you're like, oh yeah, we've actually been let off the hook here. Like, you know, if they went for a scrum, you know, or try to go for a try, like, well, that's probably running the pump here. And sometimes you take a 3, like, oh, cool, the pressure's relieved. We can go and kick it long, and then we can build push that way. But it was just very different. It was just a very good game management, good kick, good skippering work around getting the points when they're well deserved. And yeah, it's not more so around when you're getting those points. It's just around, like, it's subconsciously. You try and be process driven. You try and be first task, next task focused. But you know, you're always just looking at the back, just around, and just seeing, well, how much time is it? What's our score? And so again, you can have all the plans in place, and look, we're pretty good around having plans in place around that. But more subconsciously in your head, you just start having this conversation with Vince and I, running out of a bit of time here. And again, the difference from accumulating those points this last week when they were in Christchurch compared to when they let us off the hook around not being able to execute and get tries and points when they played them in round one. It just kind of fed to us and gave us more confidence around it. So.
This is turning into the Flower Fakatava show week by week because he's so good. But again, he's looking solid on the weekend. TJ is probably going to be back in time for Test footy if there is Test footy. Does Flower sneak in at all? Do you put him as a, you know, a guy who comes into the squad to learn? What do you do with Flower on the international scene?
It's a tough one because I think, you know, Brad Weber has signed on and worked so hard to put himself right back in the mix. I think, you know, guys like Bryn, I know he won't like saying this, but he's worked really hard. He's been in and around the environment and his counterpart, Mitch Drummond, as well. You know, like there's guys that have sort of been in and around that scene and biding their time that probably deserve an opportunity or some opportunity in and around that All Blacks squad as well. I do like the apprenticeship style for someone like Flower Fakatava in the sense that the growth he's had under Aaron Smith already, and we saw that development in the Magpies, we're starting to really see it in the Highlanders, and I think we've seen the benefit it is for him as an individual and his play. So something like that, some exposure to that level and a slow burn could be all the more beneficial for him. And I think, you know, with the nature of the tests, you know, there could be some opportunity for that in-house experience and then sending him back to some Mitre 10 Cup or something like that. That could work really well. If he keeps playing the way he's playing, I think he's knocking down the door for a genuine chance as well, because he is playing some seriously good codes. So I don't want his inexperience, I suppose, to play against him either, because he's playing good enough code to warrant selection as well. But I just don't think we can look away from guys like Brad Weber, you know, Bryn Hall and Mitch Drummond, who have stayed around for an opportunity as well.
It's hard for me with, you know, being a nine, but I think looking just at his performances, it's super rugby level. I think especially in a game like it was on the weekend against a team that's, you know, full with a lot of All Blacks, big game players, and probably a good benchmark if, you know, there were test levels and being in that All Black environment, playing against a team of that calibre. He played well, and so, you know, you want to warrant it on performances, and he played really well and has been playing well off the bench as well with Nuggie in that apprenticeship. So, yeah, if you continue to keep playing like that, then you're probably warranted off selection if you're playing consistent like that every single time. And then on the other side around Jip, you know, they've obviously had a lot of success around the apprenticeship program, around Geordie, I think Hardy as well, went through that kind of process as well. So whether they want to go through that with a slow burn and be able to bring them into the environment and get them to have a look what it's all about and to see what it's about, and then gets to be in that environment. But then again, if you consistently keep playing at a high level, then you've also got to have the conversation around warranted around his performance of being selected. So now look, he's been in tremendous form, and his growth has been the best thing that I've seen from him. And especially in a game like it was on the weekend where, you know, it was a good against us. And again, I just thought his performances have continued to keep getting better, and that'll be the main thing for him moving forward, definitely.
The Blues got a solid win. I don't think it was ever really in doubt from the start. It wasn't a pretty game. The Hurricanes, where are they at the moment, Chipper?
Oh, well, firstly, I suppose, like, the next day after the game, I was walking around, everyone was like, oh, you know, pretty much like that. It wasn't a pretty game, but I just think it was two sides that were desperate for the points. You know, and it was a good tight tussle, and you know, from my point of view, I just saw it differently to everyone else, because there was a number of people saying, "Oh, nah, mate, that's not how I saw it." And I enjoyed it from a spectacle that it was a tight fixture, it had plenty going on, and you know, like from the point that I thought the Hurricanes really managed those yellow cards really well, you know, there wasn't too much damage. They went into the break at 10-9 and then came out and got a penalty early, and they were 12-10 up and you know, probably looking really comfortable. On the flip side of that, I thought the Blues were exceptional in their, I suppose, their growth from the week before, that they never looked panicked. Mm. You know, even when they didn't get the reward from the yellow cards on the scoreboard, they just looked like they were constantly in control. And you know, I felt like Tom Robinson was leading that, you know, like constantly saw him on camera. He was positive. He was, you know, pumping the group up, and his positive energy, I felt like, just kept filtering through, like, we've got this, we've got this, you know, and it just kept on flowing through. And it was like they just stuck to their plan, and they eventually broke them down. And everyone was like, oh, you know, it took them a while to break them down. And it's like, well, hold on a minute. It was only a week ago that we were crediting Corey Jane for this fantastic shift in the Hurricanes' D and how hard they were to break down. But as soon as it takes, you know, the Blues a while to break them down, it's clunky. It's like, we can't go from one week to the other. The Hurricanes are a quality outfit, and they are a tough team to break down defensively. They tackled at 91% on the night. It was, you know, the Blues got three tries, one penalty try, two, you know, through normal tries. But it's like they're actually a clinical side defensively, and they make teams work really hard for their points. And that's why I think it was a really good performance from the Blues in terms of their calm, cool-headed nature to just work their way through the 80 minutes to get the job done. A couple of work on areas, I think, probably for both sides when they look at the tape, was their set piece. Yep. Due to the nature, I think both packs came to do business. You know, like they really wanted to set the tone at scrum time. You know, both scrums really wanted to just, it was action stations at every scrum. And, you know, I think you saw that in the aftermatch speeches, you know, with Colsey and the way he was saying that it was all on. And line out time, there was still, you know, a bit of competition in the air, and both sides were trying to get one up there. So it was more a, because each side was competing hard, that they were disrupted. So they'd want to shore up that. But, it wasn't so much that it was an ugly spectacle. I think it was just two sides brought their A game, and it was a tight tussle that was earned. Interested that the Blues didn't kick to the corner to try and go for the bonus point. They went for the three. I don't know if you picked that up, Bryn, but... I know that it was within seven, and you know, take the risk out of it and get the game won. But that bonus point could be crucial, you know. Knowing that the Crusaders had lost around that home final, you know, I know that's ambitious thinking, but it's a thought nonetheless.
Yeah, a bonus point given versus a bonus point taken away, and yeah. Which one's more important?
And I know that I've just credited the Hurricanes D in it, but. An opportunity nonetheless that maybe could have been considered. But outside of that, I thought both teams came with a hell of an attitude, and it was a fierce contest that they both lived up to, and tactically they both came at it. And as I said, it was a hard-fought win by the Blues and a hard-fought fight by the Hurricanes when, you know, two yellow cards to stay in the fight, and the way they orchestrated their game was pretty impressive as well.
Probably in that first half, the Blues probably didn't get what they wanted just with the execution. We talked around our execution and not getting our stuff right with our game plan around errors. I think there's a lot of errors in that first half for the Blues. And there's probably a message that Dan Helangahu said at halftime around having patience and building pressure. And so when they did that, then if I look at that for one of their tries, you know, they had, they built up 10, 12 phases, which is probably the first time they got to that kind of late phase count and putting the Hurricanes defence under pressure. And then... I thought the Hurricanes did really, really well in that first half, considering I think, you know, a few penalties that I probably thought shouldn't have gone their way went against them, and they also got two yellow cards. And to come in at 10-9 at half time, considering they hadn't had 40 men on for the field for the majority of that first half, I thought they did really well to hold on to that. Whereas probably in that first half, the Blues didn't get the execution right and didn't pay for them with the points. But I thought a word that really two words that kind of describe that game to me. It was just a real arm wrestle, like Jip, you talked about. I thought it was a really intense encounter. Look, probably the execution side wasn't great, but I think desperation of two teams showed with that. It showed they were two desperate teams, and it was just a real arm wrestle for 60 minutes. And then I think the Blues just got a lot better around their patience. And, you know, look at that Mark Talia's try. They built a really good amount of phase. And then Rico, you know, had a mismatch with Isaiah Walker, Leawetti, gets around him and then draws a pass to Mark Talia. Yeah, because they built that patience and they executed really, really well. And then Rico, who didn't actually have a lot of opportunities on the weekend, all it took for a guy of his caliber to get one opportunity, saw a mismatch with Walker Leawetti, gets on the outside and then draws a pass to Mark Talia and gives him a bit of a buffer for the rest of that game. So No, I thought it was an intense match and desperate. You could see two teams are desperate to try and win the game. And I just probably thought that the second half of the game opened up a little bit more and it wasn't as tight. And then again, the patience, I thought, and the composure of the Blues being able to build phases and execute a little bit better, I think was probably the difference in the end for that game.
Let's talk a bit about Tom Robinson. You mentioned him earlier. I mean, I'm not sure everyone thought, geez, this guy's going to be a captain of the Blues this year. Can you give us a bit of an insight into what he's like as a rugby player? Because he's obviously a smart guy, he's obviously a passionate guy and brings a lot on the field.
No, he's been in and around the leadership group. He's been in the senior leadership group last year and obviously this year. So no, he's done a couple of pre-season captaincy roles. And he's definitely been in and around for an opportunity, say, if Paddy went down. And with TJ Fiani's injury early on and he's just coming back in, I'd say he was the logical choice. I thought he was so controlled in his captaincy decisions. I don't know if you saw it just before they went to the big screen for Duplessis Creefy's clean out. He was up there challenging the ref and the ref said, no, go away, Tom. But that's what brought around that challenge. You know, like he, for his first game as captain, I felt like he was really controlled. And again, I spoke about his body language and all that. That just flowed. Him as a person, he's always energy. He's energetic. Him as a player, we know it's the same thing. He's just rips into everything. I just think with Tom, it's what you see is what you get, and that's what everyone loves about, and that's why he's an infectious person that you want to follow. So I think he makes a great skipper in that sense, because you know there's no BS when it comes with Tom, and that's the beauty, is you just always know where you stand. So I think, you know, for his first night at, as the skipper, he can be, you know, really, really proud of what he put out there. And you know, the Blues will be, you know, looking during this bye week to make sure that they sharpen up for a crucial 3 weeks ahead, because this competition's right back in it.
Now, Dane Coles made some comments about how the coaching staff and players need to be honest with themselves. Now, Dane is a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve and really feels stuff and says it. Are they at that point? I don't think they're at the looking in the mirror point yet, are they?
I don't think he meant too much by it like that. I think that's how Dane would review every week.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think that's just how it is. Like, I know, I've been as a captain or as a player, been asked the same thing and said those sorts of things after every week. You know, I think even after a win, Colsey would think that way. So I don't think there's too much of a, you know, there's nothing more to those comments than themself and who he is as a person for me. I don't think he's trying to call anyone out. He's just saying, look, I'm going to be really brutally honest with myself. I expect the same of others, and it's going to take strong leadership of ourselves to nail this week to make sure that we hit the ground running against a really strong Crusaders side. And that's the nuts and bolts of it for me.
Someone that's probably he's a bit of a talisman, definitely a talisman in that group. And if you hear that from a leader in your side, you know, it's going to have one or two effects. Either going to help you really well or it won't. But I can imagine they have that much respect for Dane around his delivery and how much he's done for the team and him as a person. You know, it's probably, again, it'll galvanise them and it'll be make them sure that they'll have that week of preparation being able to get it right, because, you know, they're a proud team. And, again, they'll be playing at home. They'll be playing at home against us. And, look, every time we get an opportunity to play them in Wellington, we know how much harder it is playing in front of their fans and in front of their people. So, yeah, I think Jibba's hit it on the head around that. It's just he's competitive. He's a competitive guy and wants to win. He's a winner. So, no doubt that'll be for them moving forward.
It's right after the fact, and that's I think he's hit on the head. He's a competitive man, and he just doesn't like losing. And like he's already thinking about, right, how can I get better? How can we get better? Mm. And someone's asked him how, and that's the first thought. He's like, we just got to be honest so that we can be better each day so that we can get a result.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't want to see Nani Lamape go to France. Being honest, I hope he doesn't sign. This talk that he's going to head there.
Yeah, well, look, that's going to be up to Nani, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can stop it other than that. I don't think he's fulfilled his dream, I suppose, yet, has he? Because every time, I think he's always played really well, hasn't he? He's always been right there for the picking and probably the front runner for All Black selection, and then he's got injured. Mm. I don't know if you see it that way, but like he's in hot form for the Hurricanes and then probably picked up an injury and just hasn't been able to play the amount of All Black rugby he's wanted. And then again this year, he's hot form again and he's right in line to probably be starting for the All Blacks again. So if he does go to France, then, you know, I wish him well, obviously, but I hope he doesn't, because I think he's got a huge All Black career ahead of him, and he's just, I just think there's parts of his game that he's clearly really determined to work on this year, and like he we know the strengths that he has, but I love his attitude that he's taken this year. He's really looking to work on his kicking game. He's really looking to work on his link game, and that doesn't come from a player that's doesn't have a growth mindset. Mm. So Nani, for me, clearly has a growth mindset and clearly wants to get better every day. And so one, that tells me that he's a good leader and others will want to follow him because he's the best in his field. So he has so much more to offer than just the skill set he has on the field. And that's the sort of player you probably want to keep in the game. And you want to keep in New Zealand as well. So that's me being the outside looking in. I don't know Nani personally. I've only been steamrolled by him personally. But those are the sorts of things. And the effort he's putting on his work on areas, to me, shows a lot more about his character and where he could potentially get to. And the excitement for me of where he could get to in the All Black jersey. But it's not that he hasn't been selected or given the opportunity. Unfortunately for me, every time he's played himself right into hot form to be selected, you know, he's picked up a, you know, the injury of a broken arm or I can't remember the others, but that's how it felt like. I might be wrong, but that's how I've felt.
You know, we'll always know how much of a dominant ball carrier Nani is and how much he imposes people as well on that, and you know, has had a lot of success in the All Black jersey and in the Hurricanes jersey as well around his running game. But you know, the changes in his game that he's tried to implement, you know, I look at his kicking games, his crossfield kicks, he's had a couple of those this year where it's been for a try assist, little grubbers are inside the 22, being able to see where the kick space is. And you know, you'd probably say back in 2017, probably didn't have that in his repertoire, you know, a couple of years ago. But now he's trying to evolve and trying to give that that pivot, you know, that second five pivot where, you know, he plays, that's what they're looking for, you know, a guy that can be that triple threat. And I think Nani is making a conscious effort to try and do that. And so when you've got an individual that's driven and wants to be like that as a coach, you know, that's who you'd want in a player who's obviously got that growth mindset and he's actually doing it at that level. So, you know, I think it'd be a shame for him to leave, and especially where I agree with Jip, he's got so much to give more in the All Blacks jersey. He's given a lot to the Hurricanes and, you know, hasn't been injured in a lot of those campaigns, so you've been able to see that on a recurring theme all the time. But I think for the All Black level, it's been able to, you know, not get injured and then been able to play and implement the things that he's done so well at the Hurricanes, not just this year, but you know, for a long time. So fingers crossed he stays in New Zealand. I think any time we do play against him, I'm very similar to Jip, been steamrolled by him for a couple of times. So if he did go, it would be nice not to get that number 12 running down my channel. But yeah, I think he's got a lot more to give in New Zealand rugby, and you can see with how he's playing around, how he's evolved and how much better he's got around different parts of his game.
Yeah, he's full of surprises, Nani Lamapa. That's what I like about him. I mean, you talk about the growth mindset, you know. He'll hit you with more speed than you thought he had. Then he'll hit you with the ability to be a first receiver, like Bryn said, you know. Yeah. And what that does for the opposition is make them go, oh, no, how do we defend this guy? What's he actually going to do?
Mm. Well, that's, you know, like, look at it this year. Past years, we're used to seeing him on the left or right flank for the crossfield kick or, you know, the just getting him on edge and space to use his, you know, either his speed or his ability to bump players. But this year we've seen him at first receiver distributing, and next minute he's out the back of that forward pod. Next minute he's running a decoy line. Like, he's played so many roles for the betterment of his team, and that's where you get another insight to his leadership and his willingness to do what's best for the team and all these other little avenues, and that's what I mean as well. Like, there's so much more that he's offering in that Canes environment than just his play, and that is just as valuable as that skill set and ability that he's giving on a Saturday to that Monday to Friday preparation and I suppose mentorship and ability for others to follow and see, okay, that's what he's doing, this is what I should be doing, and it's that come with me sort of style as well. So that whole package that he can offer is pretty valuable.
And when you look at the way they've selected the All Black midfielders over the last few years, they've gone for all-rounders. They've gone for guys like Jack, like Anton Leonard-Brown, guys who've got a little bit of everything. And there is no way in the world you could argue now that that is not Nani Lamape.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No. Oh, you go, Bryn.
You go.
Well, no, I don't think it is. You can't argue with it. And I think, you know, he's still refining it. But, you know, and I don't want to put this pressure on him because those players are different because I don't think they've got the same strengths as he has, and he doesn't have the same strengths. They're quite different style of players. But one player that he does remind me of, and you know, like I don't want to put this pressure on, I hate comparing players, but he is like a Mata Noni. You know, he's trending in the same direction, the way he's growing his game. You know, Mata was the same. He was you know, told he needed to work on his kicking, and you know, he did that and worked, and he grew into, you know, the world's best second five, and still is playing extremely well to this day. And again, you know, understanding how I, you know, spent time with Mutt in an environment, you know, he's the same person with a growth mindset and what he can offer squads. So, you know, I think that's more of a like for like in the trajectory of his career. And if we could get him hanging around and build into something like that, you know, he's got a hell of a lot to offer.
And I think that's the important thing, Jip. I think, you know, Ma'a went through a similar situation where, you know, he'd actually spent a lot of time, he'd been in the Hurricanes environment and stuck it out in New Zealand. And, you know, he reaped the rewards of that, being able to be a linchpin and an important part in the All Blacks jersey for that 2011 and 2015 World Cup. So, again, obviously Nani's going to make the best decision for himself and his family moving forward. But, yeah, I think he's just got a lot more to give in New Zealand rugby because of just where his game's going and the kind of growth and changes that he's made into his game, which are only going to benefit him next at the All Black level if he ends up staying here and having that opportunity.
And it's an area where there is opportunity. I mean, there are so many candidates there that can be mixed and matched.
That's what I mean. I think he's a different type of player. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, to Anton, to Jack, to Rico, you know, they would be quite... He would mix into quite a good little combination. Yeah, you know, they wouldn't be all like for like. That would give them the ability to play different styles and have different combinations against different opposition and not be a, you know, the All Blacks wouldn't be like a one-trick pony or just relying on the same guys all the time. And I think that would be great balance for Ian Foster and co to have in the stables.
I really like the idea, you know, of Manu Tuilangi, Mata Nonu, Sonny Bill Williams, having one of your midfielders who is just such a specialist at getting over the gain line, no matter who's in front of them.
And that's him, isn't it? You just know that you give him the ball on a good platform, it's going to take a couple to stop him.
Yeah, you can have the Carlos Spencer-Sam Tuitupo relationship where if you're in a little bit of trouble...
But
even
on a good platform, you know, he's going to draw attention. You can crash him a couple of times and they can think he's coming and it sucks in defenders, which will create opportunity for others. It's such a weapon because even when you don't use him, it's going to create space somewhere else.
Yeah. Hopefully Ian Foster's listening.
Yeah.
Get in there, boy.
Come on, Foster.
Ian Foster's now got to get a new All Black captain.
He does.
Where on earth, Brett, let's start with you. What do you do with your black captaincy right now if Sam Cane's not there?
So you look at Sam Whitelock, who's done it before, and you know, for me personally, that's probably the direction that I'd go in with Sam. He's a guy that's proven at that level. It wouldn't be new to him, and he's been successful when he's done that. And again, he's had that time with us, with the Crusaders, been able to captain us for 3 years and have success around. And I think for the fact that he just had so much experience as well, it'll just be an easy transition for him. And you know, I think that you know, Sam's obviously going to come back and he'll end up getting that back. But I think if you just want a bit of a transition for that 4 or 5 months, you know, whatever, how long Sammy's out for, it'll be a short period, obviously. You know, I'd probably say Sam would be the probably option that I'd go for.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think the logical choice is obviously when the decision was being made, it was between the two Sams, and Sam Whitelock's done the job before. He's got the experience, and it's not going to be such a big adjustment to the group because, one, you know he's going to be selected purely because his form at the moment. I think he's playing some of his best footy. You know, like his stint in Japan, and he's come back from that, and he just, I mean, he's playing some seriously good code and almost lifting his standards to a higher level, which I think is exciting for him, but also for the All Blacks. So, and I think the captaincy brings the best out of him. So what it will do for him and his game will be great. Outside of that, you know, say he's not available, you've then got Dane Coles, who I think will fit into the role quite nicely. I think he's great at international level. You know, he's a great option at starter, but to go to him straight away is tough because there's great competition between himself and Cody. Asafa Moore's around there, so then that's a tougher selection. But he's definitely in and around the mix to have the ability to do the role. You know, Scott Barrett's doing a pretty good job for the Crusaders. I have to, you know, mentioned Patrick Tuipulotu. I think he has to start coming into the discussion because he's done a pretty good job at turning things around at the Blues, and he's really developing into a role that where captaincy brings the best out of him. You know, I'm not too sure how he'd feel about it at that level, but you know, I know he'd be excited for maybe a little bit more of a senior role and a little bit more responsibility in this space while Sammy Cane's, you know, away from the group. He's probably still going to, you know, be in and around the group, but maybe it's an opportunity for others to step into some space to grow themselves below Sam Whitelock and co. So I think there's a few opportunities for others, not just whoever gets the captaincy, but others to step into that leadership space as well that have been doing a great job for their teams at Super Rugby level as well.
Adi Savi is another leader, and he is a guy who is an automatic selection in the most part, isn't he? So he's an option. Is he there, or is it even worth talking about it considering Sam Whitelock's likely to have it?
Oh, I think he has to be there. He's another guy that is in his first year of captaincy at the Canes. And again, I think he's going to be in a position, you know, he'll probably be likely to move to the 7 position, or he might stay at 8 if they, you know, that's another.
Yeah.
Anyway, we won't go there just yet, but he'll be starting somewhere. You know, he's probably still finding his feet at super level. Again, he might be in a place where he steps up to a more senior role where he grows that real leadership responsibility, because a leadership group and a responsibility, although there's a captain, there's still real on-field leadership roles that are important in that All Black space that can really grow and I suppose be a stepping stone to taking that opportunity, because I just think, you know, Sam Whitelock has done it before. You know, we don't need too much ruffling or reshaping. We know it'll bring the best out of him. It won't you know, distract from the group. But then I was just trying to take it another level to show that there is space and movement, because we can't just expect that Sam can play 80 minutes every week as well. So, and if he gets subbed, who do we go to and what opportunities there are elsewhere? Then there's obviously Bodie coming back. So he's obviously captained before. So he's another opportunity to step into that space.
One guy we probably might have missed, he's actually played a lot of test matches, but, you know, Aaron Smith as well. Aaron Smith's done it a little bit at, he's done it at Super Rugby level with obviously Ash being there, and he's an experienced guy, and I think maybe he might even have a little bit more influence around if Sam is captain, for, you know, for a guy that's probably going to play a lot of footy with, you know, TJ not being there, or obviously Brad's been playing well when he's been in All Black jersey, but again, he might have more of an influence around being that vice captain on the field, or having some form of more leadership moving forward.
Yeah, yeah, and he's—I think he's already in the leadership group and has been for quite a long time. So it would be a relatively easy transition, wouldn't it?
Yeah, again, a great opportunity to grow that on-field space. But I do think first and foremost, Sam Whitelock's the obvious choice.
Beauden Barrett, you mentioned Beauden before. He's obviously over in Japan. He's had two match-winning plays in 2 weeks. He's putting in beautiful kicks. He's beating Beauden Barrett. He's breaking the line. He's kicking a goal pretty well. Does he come back from Japan, do you think, like you mentioned, Sam Whitelock, does he come back better for this? Do the All Blacks end up better for this?
I think so, because he looks like he's pretty happy. He's immersed himself in the culture, and he's still playing really good code. I've commentated a couple of those top league games, and it's of reasonable quality. It's not just touch, as some people probably assume. I think that's the best thing about Sky Sports televising a number of their games. It gives you a good insight to the quality of football being played up there. And I suppose the first few weeks that there were some blowout scores, but started to really tighten up, and he was crucial in a last-minute penalty against Toyota, and obviously a last-minute try in last week's one. But if we use Sam Whitelock as an example, he's come back, you know, humming, and you'd like to hope. I really hope, for a Blues point of view and All Blacks point of view, that it's the same for Bodie. And dare I say it, he's looked great at 10.
From New Zealand schools to under 20s, and then being fully immersed in New Zealand rugby plan and understanding, it's going to be great for him to come back and be refreshed. You know, he's been in a new environment with a new team, and obviously playing really well with some of the games that I've seen him play. It's only going to help him coming back refreshed and ready to go. You look at the guys we talk about. Sam Whitelock came back. Matt Todd was over there. I look at Jerome Connor as a good example as well. He went over to Japan for a year, and then I remember him coming back and having a bit of time off, and then coming and really hitting the ground running. If you remember that year, he came back and was just single-handedly having great performance after great performances, just looking refreshed, and had that... I've just looked a lot more different, a lot more freer. So it's going to be great to have him back in New Zealand rugby. He's such a great player, and for the fact that he is coming back, it's great for us moving forward, because he's such a great player, two-time World Rugby Player of the Year. Whenever you get those kind of caliber of players playing and back now in New Zealand, it's only going to add us for the Blues, like Chip's alluded to, and the All Blacks moving forward.
As that competition gets harder and harder, and more of these big foreign players are in there, and like you say, it's getting more physical, it might not be as easy to come back as refreshed from that Japanese league.
No, potentially not. Especially, it might be a little bit different for a forward versus back, especially a 10, just in the sense that they're going to want to get every minute out of their investment, if you know what I mean. There's obviously some rules around how many international players are allowed on the field week to week and things like that. But I think 10 games out of 10 we will see Bodie playing just because of his position and the influence he can have on the game. And that's why they wanted him and invested in him. But with that also comes... there is a little bit less contact and collision work than a forward as well. So there's a balancing act between both roles. And so I just think it's a freshen up as well. There's still the collision and the impact of training, but it's more a mental refresher in a new environment, in a new city. For him, he's getting to spend a lot of family time. He's got a new baby. So there's all those sorts of things that are freshening him up mentally as well. That I think adds to him coming back here with, a rejuvenated energy to get back into a Blues jersey and a black jersey to make every post a winner.
He does look good in yellow over there, though.
He does look good in blue, too.
He does look good in yellow, and he's enjoying that width. He gets out wide and he does his thing.
He's enjoying that width, but he's enjoying finding Tevita Lee on a crossfield kick, too. Davida Lee's looking like, remember that game against Taranaki when he scored 5 tries? Tell you what, there's been a few games where he's reminded me of that game when he just made it look too easy. Mm. He's still got it. I tell you what, he's determined to play for Japan. He certainly will. He'll hit the international stage running.
What do we got this week? Saturday on Sky Sports Super Rugby, we have the Landers versus the Chiefs. Let's start down with you, Bryn. Where do you see that one going?
Well, it's going to be a tough one, I think. If you're looking at form and a team that's in pretty good form, even though it's one game, you've got to look at the Highlanders going well. So I'm probably going to go, the Highlanders actually, after just due to their performance on the weekend, and the Chiefs possibly coming off a bye as well. It might be a little bit underdone. I don't think that's going to be the problem. It don't be a problem at all. But just for the fact that how the Highlanders played on the weekend, I'll probably go the Highlanders, depending on obviously the team. But gut says Highlanders at the moment.
That means he's got no clue. I'm just chopping chains all week. Chiefs losing Sami Kane, like we spoke about, their 2 wins in a row were led so much by, you know, him as a leader, him as a captain, and just the way he would have prepared. I know he'll still, I think he's going into surgery this week, so he might not be in and around the group going into the game, but he'll still be, you know, in communication, and the other leaders will be there to stand up. I'm interested to see who slots into that 7 jersey. I don't know if Boshier's back. I don't know if Mitch Karpik's fit. So who is the potential replacement there? I'm not too sure.
I'm thinking that you put Peter Gusto Cooler at 8 and then switch Jacobson to 7.
Yeah, which is potential. Whether, you know, it's an interesting mix. I'm just saying that's quite a key shift and a potential big shift. If they do go with that, and they can back up, I suppose, their set piece, you know, the biggest thing that they've had is they've had a platform to play off in that second 40, and then they've obviously had that, for the most part, especially scrum time against the Blues, and you know, that's what's got them across the line. They've still had to fight and grind out those wins, though. They haven't been clean clinical wins, whereas the Highlanders will be buoyed by a pretty clinical win. But again, it was off the back of the other team's errors. I know they forced those errors. It's a tough one for me, but under the roof, I think with guys coming back into the environment, fighting for those positions during the week, you'd have to think the Landers at home would have to get this done in a close one.
Yeah.
If Sami Kane was playing, I think I'd go the Chiefs.
Right.
I genuinely do.
Well, they've both got that same attitude over the last few weeks, haven't they? They've brought a very similar approach where they've gone in and got it done against teams that no one expected them to.
I just think that platform up front's going to be crucial, so I'm interested to see the forward makeup. And then the battle of the nines will be good. If they can get, which team can win that breakdown and get that front foot ball, seeing Aaron Smith and Brad Weber go head-to-head and being able to play flat and fast with Mitch Hunt and Caleb Trask at 10 will be interesting.
Now, the Crusaders, Canes, Bryn, you're obviously, I mean, after the loss last week, that hasn't changed the way you're thinking about the Crusaders winning this week.
I always pick my teammates, so I'll get them to do it out.
Not going to be planning to manipulate anything this week. No manipulation for refs or anything.
No, mate, I'm looking forward to hearing your guys' comments around this game.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll just put some burly out there. Nothing taken. I'm Crusaders. I think it'll be a tight one, though. Because I do genuinely think the Hurricanes are in a better spot than they've been given credit for. They are certainly a harder side to break down than what's been made out. So it'll be the Crusaders will be obviously a lot sharper, and I'm sure that they'll be sharpening the iron on iron this week at training. But it's not an easy place to go and get a result at Sky Stadium. So it'll be a tight battle, but I think they'll pull away with it towards the end. I'll be interested to see the Crusaders selections too. See how ruthless Scott Robinson is, or does he say, I'm going to give you a go again to rectify what went so wrong at home last week.
What do you think he'll do?
Not too sure. Bryn, what is he doing? Would have named the team today, surely.
all will be revealed, gentlemen.
It is hard to bet against the Crusaders. Like, I mean, if you just look at the odds, it's hard to bet against the Crusaders.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even know last time they've lost back-to-back, let alone lost, was a surprise, so especially at home. But the one thing we know that their success has been built around is the fact that they do not panic under pressure. I suppose I've answered my own question there. I do not think Scott Robinson will be panicking under pressure.
No.
I think he'll be pretty calm. I think their leaders will be pretty calm. They'll go back to what they know. They'll be based around solid set piece, good breakdown ball, and building pressure through phases, taking the points when it's on offer, and looking to do the business up front and then earning the right to go wide.
Scott, you stirred up, Bryn?
No, they're good words, man. No, look, it's going to be a great opportunity for us again. You know, we had a pretty disappointing game on the weekend, and look, we just want to make sure that we can have the solutions and prep really well for the week against a team that we've always had really good tussles at Sky Stadium. Like you said, Jim, it's always a tough place to play. So, it's going to be a good week for us, and we're looking forward to the challenge that's going to be coming up on Sunday afternoon.
And judging by your poker face, it's going to be a good week. Hey, he has played a solid poker face.
But let's just not underestimate Colsey's comments.
Yeah.
Like that, it's going to be a sharp week at Hurricanes HQ as well. This will be a doozy. This will be a good game of footy, not to be missed.
Well,
I'm excited for it.
Sunday afternoon too.
Sunday arvo.
Sunday afternoon.
Oh, even better. Love Sunday afternoon footy.
Love Sunday afternoon footy. Have you looked at the weather yet, Bryn?
Apparently there might be a bit of rain, so hopefully the weather gods do us good. And
Ford Pack will be licking their lips.
So, now we'll see. It's going to be good. Hopefully good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited that Canes versus Crusaders generally always brings up something interesting.
I think both matches, because they're so hard to pick, I think the Crusaders is one that's potentially easier based on history and the bounce back, but that first one is genuinely a tough one to pick.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.